Welcome to a new episode of Cover to Cover. I'm your host, songwriter Matt Tarka. It is so great to be back with you. Our last episode aired sometime late in 2023, and here we are. We humans connect with the presence of music in our own unique way. As an artist, a concert goer, through our headphones, or as something that simply lives in our everyday background. Nashville-based folk pop artist Allison Leah has an innate gift for songwriting, coupling honest stories with ethereal melodies and accumulating over 3 million streams worldwide. Allison's vulnerable lyrics and soothing voice overlay organic folk pop production to create introspective singer-songwriter tunes. To listen to Allison Leah is to know her, and maybe even to get to know yourself a little bit better too. You can find her online at www.allisonleahmusic.com. Her music has been featured on Spotify playlists such as New from New York City, Folk, Pandora's Fresh Cuts, Today's Tunesmiths, and Troubadours, as well as WFUV Radio. Leah's captivating live show provides joy and self-reflection, connecting with audiences nationwide. Recent performances include the Black Bear Americana Music Festival, Tucson Folk Festival, where she was named runner-up in their songwriting competition, the Listening Room in Nashville, City Winery, and over 30 shows alongside So Far Sounds. Allison's going to be performing Tuesday, November 5th from 6 to 7 p.m. Central in True Music Room, which is in Nashville as part of the Nashville Tour Stop Writers Round. It's inside the Cambria Hotel in Nashville. Again, it's a free event, 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time. Be sure to check out her as well as all of the excellent songwriters that are going to be part of that particular round. For our conversation today, we are going to be talking about Noah Kahan and his third studio album entitled Stick Season, which was released on Mercury and Republic Records back on October 14th of 2022. So without further ado, let's get to meet our guest, Allison. Thanks for being here. I'm really glad we were able to make the time today. It's been a couple of months since we were able to organize everything. Life, you know, life is crazy and busy. Things happen. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me and for that really kind and wonderful introduction. I'm really excited to, I'm really happy that we made it work. We made it happen.
We did. We persevered.
It's true.
Yes. So we're going to be talking about Noah Kahan and where did your discovery of his music begin? How did that happen for you?
Yeah, I originally actually discovered Noah Kahan when he released his first single in 2017, which surprises a lot of people because he came across people's radar primarily in 2022. And he was one of those artists that I was listening to when he was releasing more pop music at first, and I just was discovering it on Spotify playlists, and I didn't really know him as a person. Like, I didn't know about his personality or anything because he wasn't, I wasn't following him on social media yet, but I was just really liking his music. And so I've been following him ever since. And then obviously when he started really blowing up online in 2022, that's when I got more of a sense of his personality and like became more of a diehard fan.
I love it. So no run-ins, you know, to this point in Nashville.
No. My friends, I've known a couple people that have run into him because Nashville scene is so small, but he's actually, I think, still based in Vermont. So he just takes, you know, trips to write as a lot of other artists tend to do.
Why don't we begin talking about Stick Season? First track, you know, happens to be one of the lead singles off of this record, and that's Northern Attitude. Kind of big sort of bombastic, you know, kind of anthemic quality to it. What are your takeaways from this song? What do you like the most about it?
Yeah, I feel like this song is a really good opener for the record. Like, I think as a single, it stands on its own, but also it makes more sense to me in context of all of the other songs because he has there's some really soft songs and some really large, like anthemic songs, as you were saying. And like Northern Attitude to me is one of the earliest statements of this record is going to be about like the cold, about being in the North, about it's going to be like huge and folk and rock. And it's just, it makes sense. Like, you know what you're getting into once you've heard it. And I also really like, I'm not, it's, this is like a tangential thing from the album, but I really like that he did the song, and had Hozier sing on it, because to me, I feel like his voice adds so much. And that actually gave me, that made me like the song even more to hear like Hozier sing on it.
Absolutely. I love this lyric here, that kind of speaks to a little bit of isolation. You bought some shit, you search online, you're getting lost, you're getting high. All along late in life, scared to live, scared to die.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is, you know, the type of song that was written during the course of the height of this global pandemic that we've all experienced.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think then even like it goes on to be like, you lose your kids, you lose your wife, you know, and it's the album itself really speaks to themes of isolation. So again, it's not saying anything too specific yet, but it's saying enough to know like what the album is going to touch on. And it definitely very quickly puts people in the sonic world as well.
We are talking with Allison Leah here on Cover to Cover with Matt Tarka about Stick Season. And this was an album that was written by Noah Kahan. It was released 2 years ago. I got to ask a question before we talk about another track here, Allison, and that is, what is Stick Season?
Stick Season is like the time in the fall where all of the leaves have fallen off the trees, but it hasn't snowed yet. So like being from the Northeast, it's like, it's a thing. Like people will say like, oh, it's stick season. And then I think like for the purpose of this album, it became almost like it's correlates with like seasonal depression, right? It's like, oh, right when all the leaves fall off the trees, the clocks turn back and like everything gets sad and it's winter and dark. And that's like the time of year that this album came out, like on October 14th, right? So imagine up in Vermont, even though down in Nashville, it's bright and sunny and all the leaves are on the trees. Up in Vermont, it's not the same right now.
Exactly. Which brings us to a you know, I think a good segue here. And that is Stick Season, track two, title track.
Yeah.
I hear a lot of Paul Simon in this track. What do you like about this one?
Definitely. You know, this is a hot take, but this is actually one of my least favorite songs on the album. I think that happens a lot. Like the more mainstream song becomes like played a lot. So at first I loved it and loved it and loved it. And by the time that it came out, I was like, I've heard this song, you know, 50 times already. And I think that there are parts of it that I really, it's both still putting, like showing you what the album's going to be about, but also really getting into the specifics of the social isolation. And like, I'm going to pull up the lyric. I feel like this one musically is very simple to make you focus on the lyrics. And so that's also something that's very like Paul Simon, right? Like the instrumentation, but also just getting you in the headspace to really listen to the story that's being told.
For sure. Yes.
And I think that like I'm like reading the lyrics through as I'm speaking, but the line, I'll drink alcohol till my friends come home for Christmas, paints such a picture of just, it's so sad, but he's saying it in a very anthemic, like bombastic way where it's like a statement, right? He's saying like, I'm going to do that. And you kind of very quickly realize one of my favorite themes of this whole album, which is I've written so many songs about moving away. I've heard so many songs about moving away, but this album as a whole is about when everyone else moves away and you get left behind, or you choose to stay behind or you can't leave. And I think that that's what made this song so different for me. And I think for his career too, like, I don't think there are many modern folk pop songs that are dealing with this topic.
There's absolutely people moving on. I would just like to share another line here. And I saw your mom. She forgot that I existed.
Mm-hmm.
That's, mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of heart-wrenching too.
Yeah.
You know, you're already in the season of the sticks, and even the people who he knows that are there don't know him or anymore.
Don't pay him notice anymore. Yeah. So I really think that they're, that line compiled with people coming home for Christmas and alcoholism is another theme of the record. You know, they talk about it. Orange Juice is an entire song about alcoholism that we'll get to. So it's heart-wrenching in a way that's unexpected. So it leaves like a lot to be – it's one of the songs that makes you think, you know? And I think that that's why I really, really love it so much. And – Yeah. I love that also. It's just like a pretty melody. It's like almost juxtaposition, right? You're like, this is such a beautiful little folk song that's so sad.
Exactly. Friends, we're talking with Allison Leah here on Cover to Cover with Matt Targa, all things Noah Kahan, all things Stick Season. After Stick Season, we have a song called All My Love, clocks in at just over 4 minutes. Starts off with just the simple, you know, word, okay. What are your thoughts about All My Love?
This song is one of my favorites on the album. I love it. I've loved it since the second that I heard the little cute little beat come in. I have done a lot of digging and a lot of research into this song because it's sung when you first read the lyrics, and it's how have things been now that you mention it? My folks still talk, but they speak in these two-word sentences. You think that he's singing to a lover, but at a concert once, I've never seen him in concert, but I saw a video of him talking about this song, and he said he wrote it about his dad and his relationship with his dad. And it's almost like heart-wrenching in a different way because the verses are sung to somebody else, and then the chorus is sung to his dad, where it's, now I know your name, but not who you are. It's all okay. There ain't a drop of bad blood. You got all my love. And it's just like so deep and profound where it's like forgiving his father for leaving and saying it's okay, but it's also not okay, right? The connotation behind the song is that it's definitely not okay because he's saying like, you burrowed in, I'm reading the lyrics, but you burrowed in under my skin what I would give to have you out from me. Like, it's clearly not okay, but at the end of it all, I just hope that your scars heal, right? So it's a love song to somebody that's left. And to me, it takes this, yes, you can know he wrote it about his dad and that's great, but you also can just see it as a song to someone that you had a lot of love for. And then it becomes very universal. So I think the lyrics and the subject of this song really get me and really just make me think again. I feel like this album just like it makes you think. And for me, that's what I love so much about this song.
Next we have She Calls Me Back. What do you think about She Calls Me Back?
Yeah, this song, see, it goes from like the most profound love song of like someone's leaving and you love them to like She Calls Me Back, where this one's more like playful, right?
Palate cleanser.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to phrase it. It's like a breath of fresh air after like the three heavy topics in the first three songs. And this one's, I mean, pretty simple. I really love the sonics of this song. I love the beat. I love that it's just very catchy and upbeat in a way that you haven't heard on the record thus far, right? It's really like a driving groove. But it's about someone that you want, you know? It's like I want her to call me back. What were your takes on this song?
Super playful. there was something that stuck out for me, and that was, do you remember that song? It was kind of a one-hit wonder, I want to say from the mid-80s. The artist's name was Tommy Two-Tone, and he had a song called 8675309. There's a lyric in here, you know, this town's the same.
Oh, yeah.
It was blank, but I read it. I still dial. And then he gives away this telephone number. And I was just thinking, wow, I don't know if that's any way inspired him, but just to kind of put that out there, as transparent as that is in the ether, I wonder how many fans of Noah Kahan tried to call that number to see who might be on the other end of the line. I thought that was super clever, you know, at the same time.
Right. Just, and if it,
yeah, just finding ways of him removing himself as the, you know, the subject.
And yeah, I completely agree. It's like she's still dialing this number specifically. I actually have never even thought to call that number, but that would be so cool. I should. I wonder if the person who had it either changed their number or they proactively bought that number to like, do something fun, you know, like give some sort of code for, you know, that would be a cool way to look at it. But it's a really cool song. And I just feel like we're saying, like, it's a breath of fresh air on the record. So yeah.
So that is track four. She Calls Me Back. Moving a little further in the record, we have Come Over, kind of a stripped away, you know, it sounds like, you know, sonically, we've got an acoustic guitar, maybe some banjo, and just such a beautiful falsetto in the chorus here. Is this a song that you tend to gravitate to, or is this something that kind of like fits nicely on the record, but perhaps not one of your favorites?
I love this song. I at first didn't really get this song, but I really love this song. There's so many references to the stock market crash, which makes me think that this is a song that he wrote about the, like, basically being in, he would be in middle school and high school when that happened. Because it's about his home house, like his literal childhood home, where it's saying, like, and my house was designed to kind of look like it's crying. The eyes are the windows. The garage is the mouth. So when they mention the sad kid in the sad house on Balch Street, you won't have to guess who they're speaking about. Come over. And so it's really interesting because it's like both personal and it's the same emotion from an inanimate object like a house and yourself. Yeah. It's saying the house is mine and it wants to be loved, but also like I'm here. I'm sad and I just want love to be seen the way that I am. And so I find that the pinnacle moment of this song is at the end of the bridge where he's saying like, my dad will strike it rich. We'll be the big house on the block. Someday I'm going to be somebody people want. And that always just like makes me like so sad, but in a beautiful way. I love sad songs. So for me, I was like, this is going to be one of my favorites, I can tell. I think that the theme that I'm noticing within the whole record is just how many different ways you can read the lyrics and how you can make it feel applicable to you from a personal level, or you can be like, wow, I've gone through something like this, or I feel for him who's going through something like this. And I think that that's just what, like, the lyrics on this record, why they've keep relating to me in new ways as time passes. And like 2 years later, I'm still listening to this record all the time.
That's so interesting. I'd like to couple that with the last portion of the last lyric here. How many things, you know, maybe change around our protagonist versus the things, you know, that maybe become much more noticeable during a time like Stick Season, if this particular song was written during that time frame on the calendar. Don't you know there's a coffin buried under the garden? Was there when we got here, will be there when we leave. The idea of not, you know, wanting to just like kind of just, you know, be there and leave things as they are. Like having a coffin buried under your garden seems like something you may not be incredibly comfortable with. You just, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out exactly where I'm going with this, but that just, yeah. That's very, you know, coupling that part with the stock market crash of, was that 2008, 2009, when, you know, during the last great recession,
yeah,
that would be something that, I don't know, I would want to figure out a way of not dwelling on, you know. It's a great lyric, but
yeah.
How do I make my situation, you know, better?
Well, I think what it does is it makes the listener uncomfortable, which is so cool. It's like, it also puts you in this perspective. Like, I myself have written songs where I'm writing from the perspective of like high school me, but I've never gone back as far as like middle school me. And I feel like I was kind of putting in my head, like, that would be childish, right? Because like, what am I going to do? Write a song from like a 12-year-old's perspective? But then it's like he does it in a way that's so nostalgic that it actually makes sense and kind of leads me to believe that like anything is possible with songwriting. It doesn't matter what like age you're writing about. Everybody has – like you might think like, oh, he's like a 12-year-old living in Vermont. What is interesting about that? And yet he writes this song that's so captivating 15 years later about that time in his life. And similarly, there's a song – I know that we're only discussing like the main record today, but there's a song called Paul Revere on the extended that mentions the dogs buried in the garden. So it's also like a little wink to like the whole joke in his like fan base is like – the coffin wasn't buried under the garden when they got there, but if anyone asks, it was already there because you can't be burying coffins in your backyard. And so that's like, it's like, it was there when we got here. It'll be there when we leave. Like, it's just like this, it's like little winks at different things throughout his life and his experience. And so I think that they're, again, like kind of intentionally designed to make you confused or uncomfortable. And then until you like read into it and then you're like, oh, okay, that's like, it's easier to believe like you buried your family pet. That's okay. Versus like, what do you mean? There's like a ghost in this house. What are you talking about?
Friends, we're talking with Allison Leah here on Cover to Cover about Noah Kahan's third album, Stick Season. Our next track is New Perspective. And, this is one of my favorites. I relate to this in a certain way when something new and might be considered, something from a larger metropolitan area or something like that. There's a focus on having a target now in the development of a downtown, which sounds like it didn't very much exist before this particular moment. What say you about New Perspective? Do you dig this song?
I love this song. I love that line. The intersection's got a target and they're calling it downtown. I think it's so funny. It's another song about everything changing while you're staying there. And, you know, a lot of times, like I've left my hometown when I left my hometown and came back 5 months after I left to visit, everything seems different. But when you're staying there and you're never leaving, everything kind of feels the same. So it feels silly when it's like, oh, my small town, the intersection got a target. Now they're saying it's downtown, you know, wherever he's from, like I think like Stratham or something. So I feel like this song is another breath of fresh air. It's another just like, it's a song about a very heavy topic, about everything changing, but you not being comfortable with that change. Like the implication when you're saying they're calling it downtown is that that's not what it is, right? They're calling something downtown, but it's not downtown to me because it's how silly. They put in one store. Now it's a downtown. But it's about him like poking fun at the change that is happening while he's staying there and kind of poking, like making judgments about the people in his town at that point too.
And what did that target used to be? Maybe it was a place that he really enjoyed?
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. What was it? What are they changing? Why are they changing it? And what does that mean for him and his own life? Yeah, it's just another song that's just like so specific that it becomes very universal. Like everybody's had like the coffee shop in their hometown change and have like a different name, right? or like the school changes names and you're just like, oh, are you kidding me? Like, so everyone's had this feeling.
There's a line in here that gets into alcoholism, talking about liberal rednecks getting drunk on a dirt road, attention deficit kids in their gym clothes. Mm-hmm. The concept of kind of staying put and possibly being resentful of all this change, it really struck me, you know, with paper bags drift wherever the wind blows and minds full of receipts, just not wanting to bother to keep the receipt, but this is how I'm, you know, combating whatever pain I'm feeling about this change.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually, I'm glad you brought up that lyric, because that's another really, really good one where you hear it and you're like, wow, how did you even like put that into words? Which is, it's a wonderfully catchy and just like full song. And the instrumentation in this one's actually probably one of my favorite on the record too, to like not glaze over the actual musicality of the record itself. But I absolutely love that this is like such an upbeat. I love the harmonies so much in the chorus and in the bridge breakdown. On the liberal rednecks section, it does it in a way, it really focuses your attention on the vocals and the story that it's telling.
We're talking with Allison Leah here on Cover to Cover with Matt Tarka. We're talking quite extensively here about Noah Kahan's third album entitled Stick Season. It's a great record if you're unfamiliar with it. Our next track is Everywhere, Everything. This gets to be a little bit more quieter, but it does have musically some elements of like becoming boisterous again and anthemic. This feels like a really cool transitional track to the whole record. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that this song, there is the first real love song on the record, right? And then there are songs that come after it, like Strawberry Wine, where now you're seeing a more sensitive side of the protagonist. It's both, again, it carries the same like reflective, nostalgic looking back on, but it also is for the first time, I think speaking and singing positively about the future, like saying something like everywhere, everything, I'm going to love you till we're food for the worms to eat. It's like, again, a little uncomfortable at first. You're like, huh, what is he just saying? But then you realize like how it's actually like about planning your future with somebody and wanting to live and die with somebody by your side. And that, I think that's really beautiful. Mm-hmm.
And feeling the love under, you know, while you were decomposing underground. It's a wild, wild image. I enjoy it.
I also love the line. There's so many lyrics on this record. I could just riddle them all off, but I love the verse. We didn't know that the sun was collapsing till the seas rose and the buildings came crashing, because it's just like it's the image of you just not you and your lover are the only people that exist in the world. We didn't know that anything else was happening around us. We were just with each other. And I think that that's really, really beautiful imagery.
You mentioned orange juice earlier in the context of alcoholism. Now, I feel like we're probably going to be talking about screwdrivers at this point in time. Orange juice and vodka. Possibly. What do you think about orange juice?
This is, oh my goodness, this song is probably going to go down as one of my favorite songs of all time. I could give all of the lore behind this song, maybe I will, but I think there are so many beautiful lyrics in this song. I think that the main thing is obviously the gesture of giving orange juice to someone, bought for the children. It's yours if you want it. We're just glad you could visit. And it's sung to someone that's struggling with alcoholism when you're not necessarily understanding how to handle it and how to deal with it. It's just a gesture. Like we're having a party, you know, the party's gone slower. No one will tempt you. We know you got sober, but we want to see you. And, the context of this song, I'll just say it because it's so important to me, but Noah Kahan on Twitter about a year and a half ago said that this song was written about a car crash that happened in his hometown two of the people survived and two passed. And it's a conversation 20 years later between the two survivors. And so it's just like, how heavy can you get, you know? Like, it's so, it's about, they've obviously drifted. They've obviously, clearly one of them turned to alcoholism and one, and then is trying to get sober. I think that then the lyrics at the end of the, bridge, where after it says, are we all just crows to you now? Are we all just pulling you down? You didn't put those bones in the ground. You didn't put those bones in the ground. So it's about that car crash saying, like, you don't need to let this destroy your life. Like, this wasn't your fault. And I think that that's just such a beautiful song. And it, I think where it's very, again, so specifically about that. And once he said that on Twitter, I was like, oh, that's obviously what this song's about. Like, it all clicked. I'm like, but then when you actually zoom out, it could be about anything. Anyone struggling with addiction, anyone struggling with hurting and loss and coping mechanisms. And I just think that it's so beautiful that the song is really, in the end, about that gesture. And it kind of inspires you to not feel shame in reaching out to somebody that's important to you, even if they're not going to accept the orange juice. It's still, in the end, better to reach out than to not.
That's the hardest part, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Dealing with any kind of sobriety and finding people, you know, that could, you could be considered, you know, either an existing circle or other people that just give you a place of comfort when there are temptations out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And in the end, that's I think the message that he would want everyone to take away from it. So it's a gorgeous song. And that mandolin, oh my gosh.
Oh.
when the mandolin comes in, it's really one of those songs that I'm just like, this is a little bit too perfect. It's going to be one of my favorites forever. So yeah. Orange juice stan over here.
Yes. It's beautiful song, almost clocking in at 5 minutes. After orange juice, we go into strawberry wine. Beautiful, pensive song. What do you think about strawberry wine? At first I thought, well, wait a second. Is he covering somebody? And then, oh no.
I agree with you though. This is one of the songs that feel, I love it, but it feels like a cover. I don't know what that is. I think it's just very different from every other song on the record. And it's another love song, but a sad love song. I love the 3 minutes or 2 minutes of ooze at the end. It really, again, it's just another lift from the record where you know that this song wasn't meant to be a single. It's not going to be a single, but it's a really good middle album toward nearing the end of the album tune. To show that there is hope and there is love. And I really like that about it. I like the simple instrumentation too.
Yeah. If I could lose you, I would. We buried your bones in plywood. Mm-hmm. That just, I don't know why that line just jumps out at me, but it's, some folks are in situations where that is exactly what they have to honor somebody's legacy, you know,
mm-hmm.
For people to cobble together to have a larger sort of coffin or casket.
Yeah, it's clearly also, he writes so many songs about death.
Yes.
Like
so many coffins.
So many coffins. And like, I think that it's about, like, there's a lot of sadness in death, but there's a lot of beauty and love in death as well. And so it's a very pointed song in that regard.
After Strawberry Wine, we have Growing Sideways. Another super personal song here, involving medication and trauma.
I love how abrupt the song starts. I took my medication and I poured my trauma out on some sad-eyed middle-aged man's nice new leather couch. I'm doing this from memory. So
no, that's,
I'm
exactly
like,
right.
So one of the things that I really love about this record is his talking and about his discussing of anxiety and depression. And I think that it's a very, very interesting topic to be so overt about. I know a lot of artists struggle with depression and anxiety, and I know that a lot of artists write about it, but it's interesting that he talks about like essentially like, so I check mark, I did it. Like I went to therapy. Like it didn't help, but like here I tried, you know, kind of like and we argued about Jesus, tried to find some, like found some middle ground, said I'm cured. Like he's clearly not. So I just think that it's really interesting because it kind of, to me, it feels like he's saying, it's like nobody gets me. It's the same. It's like I was left. You're not getting it. Like we argued and then we said I'm cured. Okay, I took my medication. I'm cured. And it's really so much deeper than that. And then the line in the chorus, of course, about if like my engine works perfect on empty, I guess I'll drive. And it's about that push and pull and that struggle. And to me, I think it's really probably one of the most personal songs on his record, right? Like that's kind of how it feels, at least. It feels very personal to him.
I think about the ability to drive on empty and, you know, I guess the rule of thumb is any car that you're driving has at least 10, perhaps 15 miles of gas kind of in a reserve tank.
Mm-hmm.
That's giving where you're going a lot of faith.
And I also like personally relate to that a lot. I think especially during the pandemic, there was so much that I was just going through the motions a lot. And I definitely felt like I was burned out and like my engine was on empty, but I was just putting the pedal to the metal anyway and not taking the time to rest, which is another theme that I still try very hard to work on. But I always find myself in periods where I'm like putting the pedal to the metal when I could and probably should be resting, which is something that I find being in Nashville is very not great for. I do love Nashville, but I think that me and my peers definitely talk about how hard it is to say no to anything at any given point and how we constantly need to be going out and showing our face to show that we're a person that's existing in music and working in music and kind of having to prove yourself over and over and over again. And so this line felt very relatable to me. Like if my engine's working perfect on empty, I guess I'll drive, and how it's like, that's not actually a good thing.
Yeah. I relate to that big time. Yeah. The need to be just like out there so that you don't feel forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily part of, you know, the group at any given point in time, but just that you're out there supporting people, but you know, and having people ask you like just what you're up to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Even that just feels so applicable. Everybody at any given point, like social media has made us accessible at any point, right? So I always feel the pressure to just be ever present, always be online. And it's important. And I've learned in the last year and a half or so to not be everywhere all the time. But then you have to deal with the feeling of the uncomfortable feeling of being quote unquote forgotten. And newsflash, like if you take a social media break for a week, no one's going to forget you. It's not that easy to be forgotten, but it definitely feels that way when you're in your head about it and struggling with like anxiety and all of that.
Absolutely. And our conversation piece, Noah Kahn, you know, from what I've seen, is a staunch advocate of mental health.
Absolutely.
I don't know what organizations he supports, but I was watching couple weeks back here, I was watching some English Premier League soccer, and he was talking about, you know, just the importance of mental health. I thought it was, oh, wow, cool. You know, it's been in the public vernacular for a little while here, but it was good to see a public figure like him just give it the platform it deserves.
Yeah. Yeah. I also absolutely admire him for that. I think it's a really hard thing to talk about and to both struggle with it, but also be an advocate for it. Because you're dealing with these thoughts and ideations yourself, but you're also wanting to go out and allow other people the space to be safe. And you want to make sure that other people know that it's okay to not, like, you know, it's okay to not be okay. And so I really admire him for that and the work that he's doing.
Friends, we're talking with Allison Leah here on Cover to Cover with Mad Tarka about Noah Kahan and his third album, Stick Season. I believe we are at track 11, and that would be Halloween, which, as we speak, is approaching us this week. This was a co-write between Gabe Simon and Noah Kahan. What do you think about this particular track here?
Yeah. Well, something that you just said really is a point that I wanted to say about the record that I love is he's done all of his records prior have been a combination of co-writes and solo writes. And I think that COVID probably forced him to write alone for a little while because he wrote this album solo up in Vermont. But I think that it is such a personal album. And I think part of that is definitely allowing himself to kind of explore like these ideas. I could never imagine bringing a topic like growing sideways to a co-writer where it's like, hey, I want to write a very specifically uncomfortable song about anxiety and mental health. And I think that he would has the team around him to successfully pull it off. But I think that the fact that these are solo writes are coming through in the songs themselves. You really hear it from that one voice, which is neither good nor bad. I just think it worked for him for this album. And that brings us to Halloween. So, but Halloween is another one that I really, really love. I love the imagery of the crows. There's a murder of crows in the low light off Boston, and I see your face in each one is probably my favorite line on the song.
It's funny. I had to kind of just go back through my own memory. Like, what is a group of, you know, crows called? And in fact, it is a murder of crows.
Then I'm like, did he choose crows? Because that's like, did he literally see a bunch of crows and then it just worked perfectly that they're called a murder? Or did he want to use the word murder of crows and then found the place for it?
The song for the grave that I dug, there's a murder of crows in the low light off Boston and I see your face in each one. I mean, whew, that's pointed.
Yeah, this song is truly so dark that I honestly, it's one of the ones on the record that I have not really dove into as much. I just really like think the lyrics are beautiful, but I haven't really done the reading comprehension on it yet. Like, I love the line, collect every dream in these old empty pockets and hope that I'll see them someday. But it's all of these lyrics are like heavy hitters like that. So I'm almost just like singing along because it's just like, it's such a cool play on words and such a cool song. And yeah, but let me know your thoughts on this song. I'm curious.
You know, I'm seeing, you know, a lot of series of regrets here. You know, very specifically, I mean, the guy is moving in various lateral directions in his hometown. And it sounds like there is, you know, there could be somebody who got away in a relationship and maybe that person's gone off to be somewhere overseas. I'm hearing your voice in a strange foreign language. If only I learned how to speak. That struck me for whatever reason is if this protagonist learned that foreign language, would that have been his kind of escape out of New England somewhere at that point in the future? That was, it was just, another, I thought, really cool example of how do I get out of this place? But I love being here at the same time. Like, what kind of doors would that have opened for me had I made a different decision? I don't know. It's like that movie Sliding Doors from like yesteryear. Yeah.
No, like, yeah, he's literally being like haunted by this thought. And I kind of leads me like, I don't know if this song is written to a person or a place. Like, I think that there are arguments for both. I think that it's written, obviously, it's like sung as if it's to a person, but it's haunting him. He's saying he can't, you know, he's seeing their face in the crows. Like, he's seeing this person or this ideation like everywhere. So it's just a very complex song and I really like it. I think I need to, you know, I've heard this song probably 100 times and every time I'm just like, whoa.
I mean, even from the beginning, I mean, he is taking trips. If this is all autobiographical, he's taking trips to what was it, the coastal on Shoreman. Maybe that's a little bit closer to him in New England. Yeah, it's probably closer to New England here. And then, you know, he's either keeping in touch, you know, with perhaps a lost love or somebody that's very close to this person that he kind of let escape, you know, out of his life, you know, like, you know, this person's down in New Orleans working their days. I'm assuming the print is some type of a local newspaper. Just he's finding every single way under the sun of just numbing himself.
Yeah, I drink till I drown and I smoke till I'm burning. Your hands are all over my scent. It's like a permanent change.
It's incredibly beautiful and just devastating. Yeah.
It's dark.
Yeah. Noah Kahan, Stick Season. It is a fantastic record. And if you really like a lot of dark thematic elements, I mean, this is probably one that, you know, should be part of your collection. Next, we have Homesick. I believe this is the second to last. Or no, there are a couple. Excuse me. Homesick. This, I thought this was a pretty cool song. What do you think?
Yeah, I like this song a lot. I just love the play on words homesick, where he's meaning it as I'm sick of home. Home is making me sick. And I love that. I love that the actual phrase means that you miss home, and that it's clearly, it's to me, this song could have been another contender for the title of the album, because it's literally about both being like homesick for a place that no longer exists and your youth, but also being so sick of everything that has happened to your home, being sick of being there with all the change, being sick of all of the people that have left you, and all of the death of both people and relationships. So to me, I think that this song is just gold. Like, I love it. Yeah,
I do too. And, you know, even though he is, you know, he's finding ways of, you know, just putting himself in a continuous stupor, for lack of a better word here, when he's talking about, you know, being tired of dirt roads and, you know, roads named after high school friends, grandfathers. I mean, it shows the history of the town and how things don't change. Certainly the line after that, and motherfuckers here still don't know that they caught the Boston bombers. I thought that was really compelling to me when I listened to that song for the first time, because despite the fact that he is in this, you know, this perpetual haze right now, when he feels like it, whether it's drinking too much, smoking too much pot, whatever, he's watching the news, like local news becoming world news. Like, he is definitely aware of his surroundings, but he just doesn't understand for the life of him why nobody's really paying any attention.
Exactly. I completely agree. I also think that that line can mean like they caught the Boston bombers years ago in 2013. So it's like, it's so slow. Everything is so, so slow moving here that it could either mean like people here still talk about that so much that they don't even know, like, that it's like no one's ever moved on from it 10 years later, which is, I mean, it was a tragedy. So it's not up to, you know, it's not up to him whether people move on from it, but it's also about the fact that like they haven't even received the news yet. Like it's taking so long for news to travel. So yeah, I think that that's a really, it's just an interesting line. I love that. The line about the Olympic runner too, like it's very like, this is such a small hometown that they cling onto the little bits of fame that the hometown has had. Right.
Yeah. That there's a plaque of somebody in a, I don't know, not to put Applebee's on the spot, but you know, a local chain, you know, maybe a local restaurant where they have newspaper clippings or something like that, that something that's happened very long ago now, you know? Yeah. It's a point of pride, but yet it's sad in some ways because there's maybe much more that has happened.
I also want to, there was a point probably at the beginning of our conversation where I said, I don't know where he's from, but I said a name. I can't remember what name I said, but I'm reading that he's from Stratford, Vermont. So, which makes sense because there are nods to it, but, we were talking about the photos and I'm like, I can figure out, I'll find out what photos were taken like in Stratford versus if it's just like a vibe, you know, if they just found a place that looks like, mm-hmm. like it would be, it could be. So
next we have, this is track number 13. We have Still. I think this is this another co-write? Yes. It's Noah Kahn with, Ian Archer.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't know who Ian Archer is. Is he a member of the band? I'm not entirely sure.
I don't
think
he's a member of the band, but let me look. He is an Irish writer. Hmm. Interesting. It says he's associated with Snow Patrol, which would be really cool.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I haven't heard the name Snow Patrol in a little while.
Right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Wow, cool co-write. I did not realize that either. I've seen that name before and it was just like, cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice. I like this song a lot. I really like, again, that it's a very mellow song on a record of very heavy hitters and anthems. You know, it really takes you into a moment and it makes you feel the way it is sung. Like, it makes you feel still, like everything's not moving. I think it's the perfect, like, 11th hour song on the record.
Absolutely. That feels like that takes us to The View Between Villages here. Another co-write with a Todd Clark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sad to say, I'm not familiar with Todd Clark, but he's there were several co-writes on this record with him, and sounds like a, you know, a very trusted compadre, so to speak, when it comes to songwriting.
Mm-hmm. He, I'm also curious about him. I wanna do more diving into his catalog, but I love, this is like probably my second favorite song to Orange Juice. I love that there's, to me, this song feels like moving forward until you get to the chorus of Past Alder Brook Road. And then it feels like you're almost moving backwards. Like it's like a, like some form of driving where you're really reflecting back on, like, it's almost like a reflection of the whole record. Like, I feel like this song is so visual. And it's literally because I think it feels like that as it says it, like the car's in reverse, I'm gripping the wheel, I'm back between villages and everything's still. It almost throws you back. And I think the other line that this song is very complex, so I'm like reading it and speaking at the same time, but a minute from home, but I feel so far from it. The death of my dog, the stretch of my skin, it's all washing over me. I'm angry again. Like it's reliving all of the subjects of the album on one song, which I think makes it the perfect closer. And I just, mm-hmm. I think that it's also a song where it's, he's singing that he's angry again, but the song feels like acceptance. So it's very complex. It's very interesting to me. And I also think that the almost beat when it like comes in and really kicks in, like, is very emotional.
Allison, I'd like to close our conversation with talking about cover art. So we live in the 21st century. There's always a lot happening at once.
Yeah.
The news cycle is crazy. We're always getting information kind of thrown in our face. But the one kind of thing that kind of, you know, stays put when you listen to any type of piece of music, whether it's a single or EP or a full-length album, is some type of cover art to complement the body of work that you're listening to. When you take a look at the front cover here, what, you know, do you think it, you know, the image itself is just a really solid, accurate representation of what you're about to experience?
I think so. He sings about his dogs. He sings about it's clearly like the fog on the album, the old barn in the back, like everything, the kind of dilapidated look of the barn. his wearing like kind of regular clothes for like just a cardigan over a shirt of the same color. I think that it all just really makes sense to me. It's also clearly stick season, like there is no snow on the ground yet. I really love it. I think it does a really good job.
I do too. There was something that kind of struck me is that, you know, his name is on the record, but he's way in the background. The focal point is the story. It's not it's not the human necessarily telling the story.
Yeah.
He's slightly out of focus. And that could be indicative of maybe what the state of mind was at any point in time, you know, while the stories were happening.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and I think his past cover art as well. It's always like he has an album called Busy Head, which is another, probably my second favorite album of his. And it's the focus is on what like is in his mind. And I think he's always been very close to the background. Like he's not really, his albums aren't really about him. He uses what he's going through and his own experiences to tell stories, which I think is so cool. But yeah, I'm like looking at the album cover. It feels like I'm looking at it for the first time, you know, in a new light, but I really love it.
Allison Leah, it has been such a pleasure getting to know you, getting to know more about Noah Kahan. Allison Leah is going to be playing at the True Music Room in Nashville, Tennessee, 1414 Clinton Street from 6 to 7 Central on Tuesday, November 5th. Allison, thank you so much for being here. Loved having you on Cover to Cover.
Yeah, this was awesome. Thank you so much for your insightful takeaways from the album and for having me on. This is a blast.
All right. Thank you very much to all of you for tuning in to Cover to Cover. Please take a moment to hit that subscribe button from wherever you enjoy listening to podcasts. Stay in touch with Cover to Cover on Instagram at Cover to Cover Conversations, all lowercase, all one word. Or if you prefer email, please feel free to drop us a line at hello@covertocoverconversations.com. Intro and outro music of our podcast is produced by Jarrett Nicolay at Mixtape Studios in Alexandria, Virginia. We hope you discovered some new music, perhaps rekindled your love for an old forgotten song, and shared a good moment with us as we continue to sonically explore a world from cover to cover.